It's April 1st, 2005, and today we're going to take up POMV. No, that's April Fool. We have HJR 12 before us today, and Ginny, where's the schedule? Okay, we're going to take up HJR 12, which is a constitutional amendment on repealing the budget reserve fund, and then we're going to do an overview of sales tax. These were bills that were before the legislature last session in the form of HB 293 and HB 321. But first, why don't we get the sponsor of HJR 12 and or his staff and get the bill introduced, resolution introduced, and we'll go from there. Speaker Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Morning.
How are you this morning?
By the way, Representative...
Nice to be able to walk over here this morning in the rain and snow.
Right? Let me get the committee on record. We have Representative Wilson present, Representative Seaton, Representative Samuels, and myself, Representative Wyrock. And go ahead.
Representative Gruenberg this morning. He's interested in this bill.
He'll be offering amendments later, I'm sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I introduced this bill. This is not the first time it's been introduced, but out of frustration, I guess, as much as anything else. We have attempted over the last few years to try and develop a fiscal plan for the state, and we've had a number of stumbling blocks, and one of the stumbling blocks, of course, is that we always have something to fall back on. We have the Constitutional Budget Reserve, and if you remember, the Constitutional Budget Reserve was developed a number of years ago, but to absorb some monies from lawsuits and other out the oil industry and other things, and to keep it from being spent easily, it had a three-quarter vote, constitutional vote requirement. Well, what has happened over the years, the legislature, when it has been short of money to operate its budget, has dipped into the Constitutional Budget Reserve and has used the three-quarter mechanism, which no other state in the nation that I'm aware of, including the federal government, uses a three-quarter vote to pass a budget. So, my feeling is that whether the Republicans are in the majority or the Democrats are in the majority, either one of them are going to use the CBR for their own reason. The Republicans may say, you hear the argument, the Republicans may say, we won't give you our three-quarter vote unless you keep the budget down. Democrats may say, you know, we want different appropriations for our three-quarter vote. But whatever the reason is, it's not right for the state. It's not right for a long-term fiscal plan for the state. If the state is going to have any ability and the legislature is going to have any ability to predict revenues into the future, long-term, we have to have some stable way of doing that. And as long as you have the fallback position of the Constitutional Budget Reserve there, we'll never get that. It's too easy for the legislature to fall back onto it. And we see that year after year. It's much more difficult, of course, to impose an income tax or a sales tax or use some of the earnings of the permanent fund. But if you don't have the CBR, if you have, or there have been proposals, and I'm sure my friend Eric Croft will bring a proposal forward, which I don't necessarily object to, which would constitutionally put the CBR into a capital fund. In other words, instead of it being deposited into the permanent fund, it would be deposited into a constitutionally protected capital fund where only the earnings would be used for capital projects. The legislature would be bound by that constitutionally. It could use it every year. Whatever the stream of money coming off it was, it could never use the principal. But that's not on the table at this point, but it is an idea. What I am, again, attempting to do is I'm attempting to take the Constitutional Budget Reserve, with this piece of legislation anyway, and ask the public, the people of the state of Alaska, if they would like the Constitutional Budget Reserve wiped off the books, the money that's in it, deposited into the permanent fund, and, of course, as we all know, the earnings from the permanent fund, even though politically dicey, are available for the legislature to use with a 51% vote of both bodies. So, Mr. Chairman, that's basically it in a nutshell. I'm certainly open for questions and suggestions and ideas. I know that it's a two-thirds vote in both bodies to make this go before the public, But I think it's worth the effort if any of us are truly concerned about trying to develop a long-range fiscal plan.
Thank you, Representative Harris. Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What would you think about, you just said, mentioned going into a capital fund or even the education fund or somewhere other than the principal, the permanent fund, where?
I'm not representing Samuels through the chair. I'm not opposed to that at all. What I am opposed to, though, is for the legislature to easily be able to fall back on some other mechanism rather than look at what is going to happen when we don't have that. And I keep harping on it, and I'll harp on it again today. You all have heard me harp on it in caucus, but I'll talk to you about it here in the public. What is going to happen to this state as the budget continues to increase? And we certainly have responsibility for that. I don't disagree with that. But as the base continues to increase, the price of oil decreases. You know, it will someday, I think. I don't think there's anybody that says that the price of oil is going to stay at $50 a barrel forever. It could. There may be some who will say it'll go up to 80 and stay there and go to 100. But the economics of that nationally and internationally are probably too much to sustain. But having said that, if it goes down to $35 a barrel, the way that our budget is programmed at this point in time, we're going to have to dip into the CBR substantially or get revenues from somewhere else or cut the budget to balance things. And the easiest place for us to do it right now is to go into the CBR. If that mechanism isn't available, then we have to truly look at taking the interest of Alaskans into account. Do you want to spend some of the earnings of the permanent fund to balance the budget? Do you want to have income taxes or sales taxes to balance the budget? Or do you want to reduce the budget to balance the budget? And those are choices Alaskans then will make, and they'll make it by who they elect to the legislature, not based upon the fact that we can fall back on this crutch of the three-quarter vote or of the CBR.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Harris, you know, I totally agree with you with the concept. However, I'm very concerned about putting it in somewhere permanently where we can't get to it. And the reason for that is, you know, there's always the possibility that what happened in New York could happen in Alaska as far as a national emergency, some kind of terrorist attack or some kind of a disaster. We could even have just a massive earthquake or something. And what would we do? We know that the feds aren't going to bail us out with 100% funding. And I'm concerned that I don't think we should go into the CBR at all for any other reason than have it there in case of some kind of an emergency. So I look at it as, you know, if we want to put it into some other area or something and designate what it could be used for, but I really hesitate to put it into something that we permanently can't touch it. And that's the reason, because I think we really need to be thinking about this state and what would we do in a massive emergency.
Well, it's a good point, Representative Wilson, through the chair. It's a good point, but the point has a number of problems to it. First of all, we have the permanent fund. We have the earnings reserve account of the permanent fund, which is substantial. It has political overtones to some people, sure, but it is available with a simple majority vote, not a three-quarter vote, but a simple majority vote. And even under an emergency, obviously, you're going to get a three-quarter vote, too. My point is we continually fall back on this crutch. We also have the ability to borrow. We have the ability to do a whole bunch of different things quickly if we had to. I mean, the access to money for this state is better than most. In fact, it's probably the best state in the nation, or one of them anyway. And so I'm not concerned about that. I've been through the 64 earthquake. I mean, Alaska didn't have any money at that point in time, or very little. We responded. I mean, people will do the right things that they have to. Believe me, that is not the issue. The issue is whether or not we truly want to have a fiscal plan for this state. And I think Democrats and Republicans alike agree to that, at least in our body. And that's the only body I'm concerned about at this point in time. and if we're going to get that, we have to get this crutch away. That's
one of the Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Harris, The question has often been brought up in the CBR is maintaining a minimum balance for the cash flow ability and the use of balancing revenues, et cetera. Has that been addressed, or how would we address that, or would that be that minimum minimum balance in the CBR has been talked about a lot, and I'm just not sure how that impacts with the resolution here.
Well, let me ask you this question here. If Representative Seaton, or Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton through the chair, if we spend the CBR down to nothing, are we going to be in the same position? Are we going to have a balance left? No. Oh, I mean, the answer is no, we aren't. And so, consequently, the way I see it is, do you want to have a quarter per, or 25%, basically 26% of a body determine how you're going to balance your budget or how you're going to be able to pay for these things, or do you want a majority of 51-52% as every other state does? That's my concern. I'm not concerned that we don't have $1 million in there, because we do have $1 million in the earnings reserve account. We have way more than that in there. And it's only because the earnings reserve account is such a politically volatile account that people are afraid to talk to that. I mean, our own governor has said, you know, I'm not going to touch it without a vote of the people. I mean, and people run on that. They run on that statewide. They have the people so paranoid that the legislature is going to spend it. I mean, you know as well as I do, the only reason the permanent fund's as big as it is because of the legislature and deposits into it. So I'm not so concerned about that. I mean, I heard the argument. I understand the argument. And we do have to have, you would have to have, you know, some money as a backup. But most other states, quite frankly, if I don't know if it's in your packets or not, but most other states, it's just a statutory, deposit that's in there that they have for a backfall, and it's a simple majority of the legislature in those states that accesses it.
And yeah, and a follow up, and I agree with you on that. I'm not, you know, haven't been on finance committee, haven't been chair of finance.
I have, unfortunately.
Yes, and so I'm asking, you know, what I'm asking for is not. Not a disagreement on the philosophy of the CBR, but that other function that we've been having the CBR for,
right,
as that cushion. And I'm just trying to figure out if there's a mechanism, and if we take, as this resolution has, going into the principal of the permanent fund, that eliminates that entire $1 billion cushion or whatever that amount was that we've been talking about having of the CBR to do that. And I'm just trying to figure out if that's the proper place to put all of that, or we actually should have that cushion amount, whatever that's going into, whatever fund we have for that cushion.
You can have, Representative Seaton through the chair, you can take, if you want to take a $1 billion from the CBR right now and put it into a statutory account, and that account can only be accessed if, you know, and you write the wording correctly, if the budget, for certain things you don't have the money to pay for, education, health and social service, something like that, you couldn't access that to pay for other things, and if the budget wanted to grow for this and that. The other states have those wordings, and it's very easy to come up with, and it works for them. They don't access that, even though it's a simple majority vote. They cannot access it unless if they have certain parts of their budget that they can't fund, and those being education for one of them, you know, that type of thing. So you do put a fence around it. You can do that if that becomes ultimately the concern. But, you know, I don't personally think that is a concern. It's not a concern for me, and I've dealt with the budget now for 4 years and as a finance committee member and now seemingly as a chair, as a speaker, it's also some of my responsibility. So I am not concerned about it.
Okay. Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Both philosophically, politically, and practically, I agree with everything that you've said so far. I mean, you know, philosophically, the job of a majority in the Congress or in any state legislature or anything is to set the agenda and pass the budget. So whether it doesn't matter who's in charge, really.
Right.
Practically speaking, though, first of all, I'd reemphasize, I think going into a cap, I would, my knee-jerk reaction without having read this before this morning was, going into a capital account would be preferential to me. And also, what do you think this does? The governor has come out time and again saying that the $1 billion threshold is when you start the financial markets have said that's when it starts affecting the bond rating for the state, which ended up costing money in the long run. How do you picture that playing out?
The only reason, Representative Samuels, to the chair, the only reason that is the case is because the bond people feel that the people of the state of Alaska aren't supporting any use of the earnings of the permanent fund. We still have that money available. I mean, it is there, and it's growing, you know. And sooner or later, what I'm saying is the CBR is gone, and it will be. I mean, I was here when we had $9 a barrel oil. When the CBR is gone, if the legislature doesn't have the will to tax the people or use permanent funds, then what are we going to do? I mean, you get back to that question. What are you going to do? You know, I mean, does the chief executive of the state want to impose income taxes or use the earnings of permanent fund? No, I think they've come out in record of saying they're opposed to that. So what are the options? I say lay out the options. And ultimately, this is a political decision. This is not a practical economic decision. The state of Alaska is not broke. The bond people know we're not broke. They know we're politically broke. I mean, that's a reality. I mean, we are, and we're afraid of the public, and maybe rightly so. But all I'm saying is that that's where the problem lies. It's not the fact we don't have the money to cover our debt. If we bond, you know, I mean, we have a very small and bonded indebtedness compared to most other states. Very small. We just have a single source of revenue for this state, basically. Every other source of revenue that we have pales in comparison to what we get off of oil and gas. You know, and I lived in this state, as Representative Samuels, you did as well, when the chief economic driver of this state was fishing. Fishing, and then timber. I mean, we didn't have oil and gas to speak of. And the state was much smaller, and we did things a lot differently. But all I'm saying is we are so dependent on one source right now that if that source falls off, either the volume or the price, or both, that we will be in very bad straits in the state unless if we're willing to develop a fiscal plan. And that fiscal plan certainly will hurt some people. There's no doubt about it. That's why many people don't want to have income taxes and many people don't want to use earnings of the permanent fund because they figure it's going to, number one, diminish the value of their dividend, which I don't want to do, but I look at the options and say, well, do you want to diminish the value of your dividend or do you want to have an income tax or do you want to cut education? Because if you all look at the budget, and we've been doing that, you know where the majority of our budget lies. It lies in two spots, in health care, in a variety of different ways in health care, Medicaid being the largest one of them. That affects 170,000 Alaskans are on the health care system of this state in some way or another. Or do you want some of your income, some of your personal income, taxed to help operate the state, and do you want your education system reduced, the amount of money reduced? And you know the hue and cry coming out of the school industry. I mean, you know, it's big. They think the $70 million that we're anticipating appropriating this year isn't half as much as we should have. And they might be right. I don't know. But it's not their responsibility to try to come up with the money. They're not out there trying to force people into giving away some of their dividend or giving away some of their income tax. They're really not. And so we have that responsibility. It lies on the legislature year after year after year. And you know, the reason that the CBR was developed, we were awash in money. We're not anymore. We're getting worse. If the legislature in those days would have known that this legislature or any legislature was headed for a $3 billion general fund, which we are next year, by the way, if things don't change around, they would have rolled over in their graves probably, and some of them are in their graves now. And that's what I'm saying. I think the people of Alaska need to understand where we're at. And it's not. And now is the time, quite frankly, to plan for that when we do have a better situation than we could have at $25 a barrel oil. So, anyway, I know this is a, you know, this is a philosophical point. This is a political point, but it needs to be raised, and I'm willing to raise it.
Further questions. One of the proposals we've had before us as a Ways and Means Committee is a proposal to take half the earnings of the earnings reserve account of the permanent fund and half the constitutional budget reserve anytime there's a gap between income and expenses, and to use that to extend out the way we address our fiscal gap as a policy matter. And then that assumes then that given resource development through ANWR, Stranded Gas Act, and income to the reserves, income stream to the state, that we won't have to implement any taxes, just given those two pots of money, and then we'll be saved by this future revenue stream from oil and gas development, even with increased budgets every year of approximately 2%. How does this sort of transition, this sort of relates to that, in that you're essentially transitioning out of the permanent or the budget reserve fund one way or the other. Either you're going to do it immediately or you're going to do it through a transition as we initially reviewed in this committee. How does this resolution relate to that sort of philosophic statement? And really, that bill was only a philosophic position. It wasn't specific.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know all the specifics about the proposal that you just brought forward as far as using earnings of the permanent fund and CPR combination. I'm not sure. I mean, but the way I see that is you've got the worst of both worlds. You're trying to deal with the three-quarter vote for the CPR, and you're trying to deal with the permanent fund at the same time. And so you have the anti-permanent fund people on one side. You have the people who say, well, I don't need to get three-quarter vote on the other side, and you're trying to mesh them all together at the same period of time. To me, in a budget issue, that becomes very, very problematic. But it's not saying it can't work. It seems like you double your problems rather than simplify them. But
essentially what your proposal here is to do is to get rid of the political issue related to the use of the constitutional budget reserve, get rid of it.
That's right. I'm not concerned about, Mr. Chairman, I'm not concerned about whether it goes into a capital-generating fund that's protected by the Constitution. In other words, the stream coming off of it is dedicated by the Constitution to capital projects. That's fine. The state certainly needs them. Our deferred maintenance is so huge. It's all over the state in all different kinds of ways. $100 million a year or whatever generated by this by the CBR would be well spent in good deferred maintenance. There's nothing wrong with that. I have no problem with that. What it does do is it takes the political problem away. And I'm saying the Democrats will be in control of this body and the other body at some point in time. They won't have the Republicans holding them up for a three-quarter vote. I have Democratic people who are supporting that concept, believe me. A lot of Democratic legislators are supporting this concept. They understand it. They understand the fact that sooner or later they'll be back in the majority. And they don't want to have the Republicans holding them hostage. And we shouldn't have to. That's my personal view.
I don't think the public really, you know, people don't. The nuance of how we get the money is less important that the money is there for spending on state government. They want spending for education. They want to make sure that their kids are educated and they have adequate instructors, their health care, transportation, whatever. The problem is that the emails I see is we elect you all to make a decision. Make the decision. But
don't hurt my pocket in the process.
Well, part of that. I mean, there also is a large component that wants to ensure they get a permanent fund dividend check.
Right.
And their program isn't affected if they benefit from a program. And that somebody else pays a tax if we're going to tax somebody. Now, that's the cynical view. But I think, in general, the nuance that you're talking about, the machinations that we go through here as a legislature involved with getting the three-quarter vote on the constitutional budget reserve is something that's sort of interesting theater, but eventually the public wants to know we're acting responsibly. Is this proposal going to address the mission of this committee, which was to look at alternative sources of revenue in order to get ourselves on a stable fiscal footing and long-term fiscal stability? How does this really play into that mission?
It plays, Mr. Chairman, it plays into that by forcing a long-term fiscal solution. If you don't have the CBR as a crutch, as I've stated six or seven times already this morning, it forces not only this legislature but future legislatures to figure out how they're going to fund the increases in their operating capital budgets that they propose. It comes down to a basic economic balancing act. If you want to spend it, how do you get it? And you don't spend more than you get, because even though I'm sorry Representative Roachberg's not here this morning, but I believe he has some kind of a piece of legislation out there for a balanced budget amendment. We don't have that in our Constitution or in our statutes. But, you know, basically we haven't been balancing the budget off of known revenues from year to year. We've been dipping into our savings year to year. This year, fortunately, we won't have to do that. But in the past years that I've been in the legislature, and most of you have, we borrowed money, essentially, to pay our debt, to pay our cost of government. You know, and many states don't have that luxury. They have to raise the revenue to pay their way. And we have avoided that, basically, over a number of years.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another practical question rather than philosophical question. This would go on the ballot in 06, and if it passed, then the following legislature, it says here that on the effective date of the repeal of Section 17, et cetera, et cetera. What would be the effective date? I mean, does it immediately? So November 1st or 2nd comes along, the money's gone, and the next legislature, because if you wanted to go to a POMV methodology again.
Right.
I mean, you could do it statutorily, but that creates other problems depending on what the market does. So potentially some of the fixes that you're trying to force wouldn't be available in time for the transition. You see where I'm...
No.
If you take away the CBR money completely in 06, so that the next legislature comes in here, they can't fall back on the CBR. If you chose to go with a POMV methodology as part of the fix, that election for that, you'd either have to have a special election, which I suppose you could do, or be 2008 then, at the next election for a constitutional amendment to switch POMV. But in the 06, from the time you swept or closed down the CBR to the time you changed the methodology to POMV, you can't have taxes big enough. I mean, you can't bridge $20 oil with income and sales tax. I don't think you could do it.
The answer to that is if the legislature is truly concerned about that happening, you could go back to the issue that I brought up or that Representative Seaton brought up earlier. You could take $1 billion from the CBR if the legislature felt that with a two-thirds vote of both bodies and put it into a statutory fund that later could be accessed if everything else, if you went to POMV, which I support, if you went to that, and things started to settle down, then you could always take that statutory pot of money and deposit it into either this constitutionally protected capital fund or the permanent fund or whatever.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we took the money out of the CBR and put it into the newly created education fund, would that have to be by a vote of the people, or could we do that just legislatively?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, no. It statutorily, you right now, it takes two-thirds to access the CBR. I mean, we're supposed to pay it back. You know, we owe it about $5 billion or $6 billion or something like that. But the point of the matter is that's why we do the reverse sweep every year and the sweep provisions and that sort of thing in the budget. You could put it in there. Remember, the education fund is a statutory fund, but it can only be used to deposit money into the foundation formula, by formula. So if you had a couple billion dollars in there or $3 billion in there, and your education and your foundation formula only required $800 million, that's all you'd put in there every year. But it would automatically come out of that. That's the first place it would come out of there under statute.
And what's that education fund called that we just created?
I don't know what it's called, but it's a
public education fund.
Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Any questions, Representative Seaton? I think Representative Harris, it's important, I think, for the public to appreciate, too, on this House joint resolution. What happens is that this is a constitutional amendment, and it would have to be passed by both bodies of the legislature by a two-thirds vote and then given to the people to vote on.
That's correct.
In addition, this resolution has four committees of referral, and so there's, even though it's the Speaker's bill, there's been no technical evidence that there's a desire to move this through the system faster than any other important piece of legislation, and this is a significant thing because the legislature has relied on this to fund state government and programs for a long time. So this will get plenty of airing. There is some interest in establishing something like a capital construction fund let's use, for example, the permanent fund, which can use a stream of revenue on investments, then bond, then obtain projects for a long-term future. Certainly, there's enough resource in the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund to get a substantial amount of revenue stream through bonding to fund projects and programs of the state of Alaska for a long time to come, and this certainly could be considered seed money for that. And that's probably one of the permutations that this kind of analysis is going to take. We did have some testimony from Department of Revenue on what this would mean for state government and the revenues for state government. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about on this,
No, I think you heard enough from me.
Representative Wilson?
I don't know what our deferred maintenance is for this state, but I do know that 5 years ago when I first came in, that the deferred maintenance for this state was over $1 billion at that time. So I know for sure it's way above that now. I don't know what it is, but there's definitely a need in this state for us to take care of capital needs, and not only construction, but maintenance is huge. And I think we have a responsibility to make sure that happens. We've got harbors all across the state that the state owns that are deteriorating and literally falling apart. And we have buildings that across the state that municipalities rent from the state that it's literally leaking through the ceiling and dripping on computers and that's reality. Those things are happening. So I really think that is an area that we kind of have a tendency to put off, obviously, and we keep putting it off, and we only do what is necessary, and it's not very responsible as legislators when we have areas all across the state, probably in every district, that there's that need. So I would like to see this changed and transferred for not going into the principal of the permanent fund, but going into some kind of a capital construction and maintenance fund. And I don't know if we need I don't know where the rest of the members are on that, but I would really like to see that.
We're not going to take amendments on this now. I want to get the Department of Revenue's testimony on this. It would be my intent, because we're doing a lot of overviews in the committee on general proposals. We have a number of bills in the committee, but this is one of the few bills that anyone's asked for a hearing on. So there's lots of interest, but yours is one of the few that have actually requested some movement. So what we'll do, Representative Wilson, if you have a conceptual amendment you can bring to the committee next time, we'll bring this up, and we'll try and I'll advise the committee members to bring up their amendments and discussion on this bill, and we'll try and take action on it next time we meet.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson through the chair. Representative Croft and I are actually working on a change to this that will do exactly what you're talking about. So I'll work with the chair, if that's all right with you. I'll work with the chair, and we'll see if we can't have a CS drawn up that would deal with that particular subject.
And just given the nuance of the next committee that's chaired by Representative Seaton, and then through Judiciary and then Finance, this is probably going to look different. Probably. I'll bet the CBR on it that it'll look different by the time that it gets to that committee.
Probably a safe bet.
Thank you. Any further questions?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a good idea, and look forward to CS.
Any further questions? Okay. Mr. Boutin?
Tom Boutin, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, I sure don't need to take a lot of time, and I sure don't disagree with anything that I've heard said, and I've been here since the committee.
Mr. Boutin, we have some documents that have been handed out to the committee. Were you going to address these documents?
Sure, certainly, you bet. Just wanted to tell you the two ways that the Department of Revenue, and specifically somebody could say the Treasury Division of Department of Revenue, use the CBR right now. And I would presume that a sweeping change to the CBR would include some changes that would somehow accommodate the way the CBR is used today. It's used in two ways. One, as a cash flow buffer, and I'm sure you no doubt know that even in years when, because oil revenues are high enough, even in years when recurring revenues do match expenditures, there's a need for a cash flow buffer because state cash flows are not even on a month-to-month or week-to-week basis. So the CBR uses a cash flow buffer. As a matter of fact, the governor has said a number of times that he wouldn't allow the CBR to drop below $1 billion, and that's partly because some $400 million is required just as a cash flow buffer throughout the year, even in a year when the budget is balanced, and two, because the state of Alaska has such volatility in its revenue source, that certainly argues for having a higher cash on hand than, say, a state that higher cash on hand than a state with more regular, more predictable revenues would have. Then the second way that Department of Revenue uses the CBR is in showing the credit rating agencies that despite the volatility in state revenues and despite, if you will, the lack of a fiscal plan, the state does deserve to be a AA credit. And one of the reasons, a very key reason, why the state deserves to be a AA credit is the liquidity that it has. And certainly the largest part of the liquidity that we put before the credit rating agencies is the CBR. And I've got a whole bunch of excerpts here from the credit rating from what things that credit rating agencies have written that bounce back to us the importance of the liquidity that the state has, acknowledging the extreme volatility in the state's revenue source, which is unique to the state of Alaska. And therefore, the credit rating agencies aren't accustomed to evaluating a state with that kind of revenue volatility. So those are the two things I wanted to say. And Mr. Chairman, the material that was sent over focuses on the first point and shows the way that the state uses the CBR as a cash, a source of cash throughout the year, and then, of course, in years when recurring revenues don't meet expenditures, they use it. The state uses it as its cash source to balance the budget. And as the Speaker of the House, the previous speaker here, said, of course, a result of that has been that something north of $6 billion has been taken out of the CBR and not been repaid.
One question, thank you, Mr. Boutin. One question I had is because the state of Alaska relies on the Constitutional Budget Reserve to bolster its credit rating, its AA credit rating, does the state of Alaska also rely on the earnings reserve account to similarly bolster that credit rating?
Well, credit ratings are kind of a subjective and certainly a qualitative as well as a quantitative type of thing. When the Department of Revenue, when the administration shows the credit rating agencies what liquidity the state has, we include the earnings reserve of the permanent fund right along with the balance in the CBR. But the credit rating agencies watch this state very closely. They read the newspapers online every day, particularly during the legislative session. And so they're aware that while the CBR has been used very frequently, of course, there has been a reluctance on the part of the legislature to use the earnings reserve to fund ongoing state operations. And They're not only aware of that, of course, to some degree, and I testified earlier this year in this committee, to some degree the credit rating agencies already anticipate that there will be a fiscal plan to match recurring revenues with expenditures, and something that was unprecedented in my experience, one of the credit rating agencies so strongly believed in the governor's plan to match recurring revenues with expenditures that they went to Fairbanks to the Conference of Alaskans and spoke about POMV. And normally you don't see credit rating agencies enter into policy matters. They just evaluate what they see and put the rating back to you that they determine that the credit should have. But in this case, one credit rating agency did go to Fairbanks and so much wanted to see a plan adopted that would balance recurring revenues with expenditures that they did speak to people on policy matters.
Can Revenue opine that if House Joint Resolution Number 12 became law and was implemented by or adopted by the voted approved by the people, that the state's credit rating would not be negatively affected?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think this is part of a process, and I think this this resolution is part of a process, and so I don't know that looking at it as a looking at this one component, and I can certainly say that if the state didn't have the liquidity today that it has in the CBR, there would be severe consequences both of the two areas that the Department of Revenue uses the CBR in cash flow, in having warrants covered by cash, and certainly in the credit rating area. If the state didn't have the liquidity that it has, which another way of saying, as a previous speaker, as Speaker Harris said, someday, absent some change, the CBR is going to be depleted, and on that day, the state wouldn't be a double A credit. Anyone would be safe in speculating, and on that day, I don't know what the state would do for cash.
One other question, then Representative Wilson, Representative Seaton. Is the CBR at any point encumbered? In other words, does the state of Alaska ever encumber a portion of the CBR, even though it's not transferred to the general fund? Is it ever encumbered for purposes of, say, bonding or future expenses, anything like that?
Well, encumber accounting.
Mr. Buchanan, let me just give you the reason I asked the question. Because it says on the effective date of the act, the unencumbered balance in the budget reserve fund. And I just wondered, does that leave a loophole that would require an encumbered portion to stay in the CBR?
Well, the state warrants are against the general fund, and the state draws into the CBR as a cash flow buffer to cover encumbrances. In the case of debt, the state, in the case of general obligation debt, and the only general obligation debt the state has is the debt that was authorized in 2002, and the debt was sold in 2003, $480 million, I think today, would have to look, would be outstanding. And for that, the full faith and credit, which means all of the resources of the state, every dollar, every acre of land, is pledged to pay that general obligation debt. And so that certainly would include the CBR as well as other funds. The state has lots of other kinds of debt. It has lease debt, which is comes under the category of general fund debt. And while that's subject to annual appropriation, if the state didn't appropriate money, say from the CBR or any other source, to make the lease payment, which is actually debt service on that lease debt, then its general obligation rating, which is the underlying rating for state and state agency debt, would be suspended. And there's That certainly hasn't happened in the state of Alaska, but it's happened with other kinds of credits, and the credit ratings would be suspended, and the ability to issue debt would be suspended. The state also issues debt which carries the state moral obligation, and that's a structure where the executive director or commissioner of whatever entity is responsible comes to the legislature, and if a debt service reserve fund typically isn't kept to a level that's been pledged to the bondholders, the state's moral obligation has never been tested or called upon, but if it were, and there was a failure to fund that, replenish that reserve fund from whatever source, including the CBR, then there again, the state's credit ratings would be suspended. Those certainly don't fall within the accounting term as it's used in encumbrance, whether it falls within a dictionary definition of encumbrance, I don't know.
All right. Representative Wilson.
I almost forgot what I was going to ask now.
And go see the come back if you want.
Yeah, why don't you do that, because I've no part of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pinhan, if the CBR wasn't there to establish the buffer, and we either had this money transferred into a capital account, could that be utilized in any way as this buffer, or would we need to have some separate accounting, or would it be the earnings reserve? How would you structure the buffer account, or what would the state need to do for its ongoing revenue?
Well, I guess I'd have to look at, I'm sorry, but through the chair, I'd have to look at whatever it was people were trying to do and what it was written. To have the CBR works right now as a cash flow buffer. Putting some amount that's in the CBR right now into some capital account, which would then become the cash flow buffer, That sounds pretty neutral to me. With just changing names for the same amount of cash, so I guess the impact would be neutral. If we take liquidity off the table without addressing the fact that we have this volatility of revenues and recurring revenues don't match expenditures, if we remove liquidity, then the consequences are obvious, and the extent of the consequences depend on the extent that we remove liquidity.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we, and the end of the CBR is going to come, whether we do it now by ending the fund or whether we do it eventually by depleting it, that end will come. And you mentioned that the AAA rating would end the day that fund closes up, depending, maybe it wouldn't, depending on how we did it. But let's just say that all at once now, the fund is gone, and there's not another fund to deal with that rating. How long, so that would mean that whoever has to face that, whichever legislators have to face that, they're going to have to scramble to figure out how to get something in place, whether at that point, whether it be an income tax, a sales tax, whatever. Let's say it happened right now, and we didn't have enough money to do the budget, and we had to scramble right now today to set up something, whether it would be a sales tax or an income tax. Tell me, how long would it take, literally, for the department to set up the regulations and to get everything in place so that we could put something in place and to get some money back? How long would that take? Could you do it? How fast?
Through the chair. First of all, the state's credit ratings, and if I hope I didn't misspeak. With Standard & Poor's, it's a double A. With Moody's, it's a double A, too. And then with Fitch Rating Service, it's a double A. Exxon's a triple A, but the state of Alaska has the highest ratings it's ever had. And at this time, it's never had higher ratings. And it's a double A credit. And by the way, as if the Department of Revenue, of course, in its semi-annual revenue forecast, does forecast when the CBR will be depleted. So certainly we acknowledge that, that the CBR is a finite amount of money, and does have a scheduled depletion date given forecast of revenues and anticipated expenditures. And if the CBR is allowed to wind down, the credit rating agencies will anticipate the depletion. They would not wait until it was actually depleted to take action. The Department of Revenue does have the ability to issue revenue anticipation notes. That's a very short-term measure. And again, not to focus too much on the credit ratings, of course, states that use short-term borrowing to meet ongoing expenditures aren't AA kind of credits at all. They're not even close to AA kind of credits, and credit rating agencies like to see not only liquidity, but they like to see recurring revenues match expenditures. They like to see your regular revenues meet your regular operating budget, and this liquidity that they like to see to just be used in rare circumstances. I have someplace here some estate credit. Would take me a minute to find it. Michigan. Its AA credit. Its credit rating was just lowered by Standard & Poor's because it persists in, according to the write-up, it persists in using one-time revenues to meet ongoing expenditures. So its rating was lowered. It has the liquidity, but the rating agencies like to see, and again, they certainly, I believe, like the POMB proposal that the governor had, they like to see ongoing expenditure is met with your regular revenues. But the state does have the ability to issue revenue anticipation notes as a short-term band-aid if there was an instance where otherwise it'd be some kind of default.
Representative Wilson. And for the record, we're joined by Representative Grunberg.
But I'd like you to answer the second question that I had, and that was, how long would it take you to set up some kind of something that would be ongoing, like an income tax or a sales tax? How long would it take, you know, if the legislature gave you that authority, would we, in 6 months, be getting money from it? I mean, I guess I want to hear the answer.
Well, there have been lots of discussions in this, through the chair, in this committee about a whole variety of different taxes, and I think certainly the fiscal notes and the testimony of Department of Revenue in each of those instances has estimated not only how long it would take to set up, but what how much money it would take to set up and how much income would be brought in. So respectfully, I think the Department of Revenue has provided that kind of information, and I have to admit, you know, right off the top of my head, I don't have memorized how long it would take within a case of an income tax, and how long it would take in the case of a sales tax, and how long it would take in the case of a head tax, et cetera. I'm sorry, I didn't bring that information.
I guess I just want to get it on the record that you can't do it in a short amount of time, that it would take a while to get this in place, and to get it in place so that across the state it would be in effect.
Well, through the chair, it seems like it takes a whole number of years to have a fiscal plan adopted by the legislature.
You're still not answering my question.
I'm sorry.
Any further questions, Mr. Tan?
I appreciated the pitch.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. Is there anyone else? See, Laura, you're here for questions only, is that right? Okay. Does anyone have questions of the Permanent Fund Corporation? You have some seat?
No, but I did have a question for the sponsor again, if he was available.
Speaker Harris.
I was curious about the concept that you've been working on as far as a capital account and whether that would incorporate this buffer idea that, we were just talking about with revenue, or whether the idea of that count is that it's not going to be used as, a buffer, and that takes a secondary account. And I'm just confused as to if you have a dedicated capital account that's only going to be generating interest for capital expenditures, if that could actually be used as a buffer account. And I didn't quite get the answer detailed enough from revenue.
Well, I think you could structure it that way. It's not anticipated to be that way. Representative Seaton, through the chair, sorry. The anticipated way of doing it was to take the balance in the CBR at the time of the election and deposit that into a constitutionally protected but interest-earning available capital account. The resolution you have in front of you just takes the CBR balance and deposits into the permanent fund. If you took what concerns me about the capital account is trying to educate the public on what exactly you're doing here. They get, you know, confused enough as it is when you start talking about the permanent fund and, you know, deposits and withdrawals and whatever. But if you structure, or if it's attempted to structure a separate account aside from the permanent fund, but constitutionally protected, but the earnings, just as the earnings of the permanent fund, are available for the legislature. But this is a place in the Constitution where you can instruct the legislature what the money has to be used for. Okay. You know, statutorily, we can't do that. We can suggest, but we can't mandatory obligate, let another legislature to be using something. Just as the school fund that was created, if it's going to be spent in the operating budget, normally, in other words, just automatically, it just goes into the foundation formula. But through legislative action, you could withdraw all the money from that fund, you know, through appropriation. It could all be taken out of there. But if it's automatically going to be used for education, or if it's automatically going to go, then it's just used for education. Takes a special act of the legislature to take it out. Your point is, and I don't disagree, that the state obviously needs a cash flow reserve, in other words, the ability to withdraw. They have that ability with the permanent fund. You know, people just don't want to talk. They can borrow money from the permanent fund and pay them back. It's not illegal to do that. It's probably more cumbersome because it's politically more volatile. People say, hey, you're taking money from the permanent fund. They have to pay back every dime that they take out of the CBR. I mean, they have to, you know, fiscally, their fiscal responsibility is if they take money from the CBR that's not allowed by the legislature and they don't pay it back, they have not only a fiduciary responsibility, but my understanding is they have a legal responsibility. And not only the governor himself probably would be put under, if not paying it back, would be put under a legal challenge against that. So they're not going to take money from the CBR they can't pay back. So they do that. They know they have the cash flow coming in. It's just they don't have it on hand at the immediate time, so they use the money and they pay it back. That's been going on for years, so I don't disagree with that. I don't believe you're going to find, unless you have, you know, maybe a Louisiana issue where, you know, people in the past have borrowed money and never paid it back, but or other states, but mostly Louisiana is the famous one for doing that. But I can say that because I've been down there and I've talked to some of them, and they laugh about it, but, you know, people have gone to jail for that, for corruption. But anyway, neither here nor there. It wasn't you, Max.
No, I said that they laugh about that, too.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if you long about that or not. But anyway, that's the point. The point is I don't disagree that the state needs to have a buffer of some sort or another. And that could be developed either by taking some money out of the CBR before the election, in other words, before and put it into an account that would only be used as that. It would be paid back year to year. But I think that there are other mechanisms as well if you didn't do that, such as the permanent fund earnings reserve.
There's some discussion that, there's some discussions that we should have tax policies in place that kick in when revenues don't meet.
Trigger mechanism? It's, you want me to answer that?
Well, I don't know. It's, since we're sort of having a philosophic discussion, that, that in a way that gives some comfort to those that are leery of enacting a tax up front, but makes a contingent on a political lack of will.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to say this gives, if the public votes for this, if it were to be put in front of the public and the public votes to take and encumber, as you say, encumber the CBR into some fund where it's out of the reach of the legislature without a vote of the public, then the legislature hasn't got a whole lot of choice. If it wants to pay its bills, it's got to come up with the revenue someplace. And Representative Wilson brought up the question to the administration on how long it would take to put something. Well, we know that it would take a minimum of a year, to get it in place and to go through the budget cycle and to get the revenue start coming back in. You wouldn't be able to predict in your budget what kind of revenue you'd have, you know, for at least the whole year. So you'd want to have something in place at least a year in advance, minimum. And that's, you know, and that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to raise the awareness of the fact that if we get to a point, and the reason I gave this four committees a referral, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, is I want this to be fully discussed. I don't want this to be something that that the public sees out there without it having good legislative hearings and a lot of different people seeing it. And if it manages to get through this body, that that it has good hearings in the other body, and if it then if it gets to the people, then it'll be fully discussed, so that people won't be blindsided by what they're having in front.
If you could, you or staff, come to the meeting next week, we'll take this up again and offer either actual amendments, conceptual amendments. If you have a committee or a sponsor substitute you want to bring in. We're going to brainstorm some alternatives to the language and try and take action on it next meeting.
Very good, and we will, and I will bring some bipartisan support. I think there is it out there, and I'll bring some here that with the form of a CS or something that you might be interested in offering, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you can get three quarters of both bodies to vote for it anyway, then
two-thirds. Three-quarters to do a CBR
but
draw.
But if you can get the three-quarters, sure. If you get 30 people to
draw it
for,
out,
you
to
don't
zero.
Need the amendment. You can just draw it out and move it to a capital account. You can.
No, this, Mr. Chairman, Representative Samuels, what we're talking about is a capital account that's constitutionally protected.
Okay, good point.
In other words, that you couldn't use the principal, just as you can't use the principal of the permanent fund today.
But if you were going to sweep it into the principal, we could just do that.
We could take.
Yeah, if you can get three quarters vote, you can just. take the principal, and you'd have the big debt sitting out there.
That's correct, but you still have the CBR on the books. You still have the debt that's owed to the CBR. You still have the sweep provisions and the reverse sweep provisions on the books, which by law have to be adhered to. And so if you want to take those off the books, you have to ask the public to do that.
Fair enough.
Any further questions, sponsor? All right. Thank you for coming.
I do have one.
Representative Grunberg.
And I apologize for being late here.
If your floor time off, Max.
I'm sorry?
I say it's going to cut your floor time off now.
No respect.
All right.
Representative Harris, why under this are you repealing the CBR? Why not just leave it on the books in case you need it?
There's absolutely no reason to need it. If we put this money either into the permanent fund or if we put it into a capital account, there isn't any reason to need it.
Well, there might not be any reason. I'm not sure I disagree with that. I'm looking at the text rather than the capital account concept. But might there not come a day when it would be handy to have a CBR for some reason. I don't know. I don't have an agenda here. I'm just wondering whether, with all the possibilities that are infinite, that might be something that would be helpful at some time. Or to have a CBR that other things could be put into, maybe modifying it in some way so that wouldn't take additional money from something could be put in, and to take money out wouldn't require a constitutional amendment, sort of an intermediate fund. I was here when the CBR constitutional amendment was adopted, and I've often thought that that might not have been a very wise idea. But I'm not sure that I'm right in thinking that either. Can you or anybody else see a need for a CBR-type entity in the Constitution?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair. It depends on what you want the CBR to be used for. I mean, or what you want any fund of money for. You know, there's a rationale amongst some people in this country is that the government ought not to have more money than it needs. And so you get down to the point, what does the government need? If we have, you know, there's a fear amongst many people in this state, of course, that if the state, if ANWR were to open or some other, and the state became awash in money from lease sales or whatever, what would we do with that money? Much of that is protected now because a portion of it goes into the permanent fund automatically. The legislature certainly, if it had large amounts of money available to it that it wasn't expecting, could appropriate more money to the permanent fund. But if you go to the CBR, what my concern is that and I mentioned this earlier, Representative Grunberg, is that no matter who's in charge, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, if we use the CBR as a mechanism to balance the budget from year to year, that's not, in my opinion, a true reflection of what the public is looking for in its legislators. What the public is looking for in its legislators, in my opinion, as most other states have, all other states except Alaska, best of my knowledge, is they have legislators they elect based upon either social policy or fiscal policy or personality in some cases. I don't think I was one of the personality, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. They have, the legislators run on the fact, I'm not going to tax you more, or I'm not going to support this agenda or that agenda or whatever. We really don't have that ability in this state to have legislators run on that platform. We can't say we're going to increase your taxes or decrease your taxes because we don't put any taxes on people. We don't have an income tax, a state income tax. You know, we have very limited taxes on the public that the state imposes. So what are we running on? We're running on, we want to spend more money, or we want to spend less money. Something like that. I mean, a variety of different reasons. But, you know, are we not going to spend your permanent fund dividend, or we're not going to, you know, all that kind of thing. But when it comes right down to it, the reason I'm doing this, Representative Grunberg, is because, as you and I have talked, we cannot seem to be able to sell, as the previous speaker that was up here said himself, it's taken this legislature years to try and develop a sound fiscal policy, a sound one. Everything we're doing, and we've survived, and we'll survive longer as long as the price of oil is high, that's fine, but we are setting ourselves up for, in my opinion, a big fall. And we've talked about it over the years, and we've been bailed out. We've been bailed out year after year. And we may continue to get bailed out, but I am not the type of person that wants to sit here and say we shouldn't be able to have a fiscal policy because we have this crutch sitting out here keeping us from having it. That's the real reason I'm doing it.
I agree with you, and we've talked a lot about this, you and I. Through the chair, and we have on this committee, and we have House Bill 52 and various other things. But I could see several possibilities for something like a CBR. and I want to think more about it, but I appreciate what you've said. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I do want to respond that I don't have a problem with the capital fund that we've been talking about, but I do believe that the only way you're going to probably get that through is to have it protect the principle protected by the Constitution, so that somebody doesn't come in and decide they want to spend it all 1 year, $2 or $3 billion or whatever might be in there.
With POMB in it.
Yeah, that type of thing. I'd like to have a capital fund that the earnings is used. It's not the earnings of this capital fund wouldn't be used to pay somebody's dividends, so you wouldn't have that pressure out there. It would be used year to year. It might turn out a stream of $100 million or $50 million or whatever it is, but that would, in essence, be at least the beginnings to your capital budget.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
One thing that did come to mind, given the historical, wildly fluctuating price of petroleum products,
right.
It might be helpful to have some kind of an intermediate fund, like a CBR, for the lack of a better term, that the money wouldn't have to be appropriated into a permanent fund, and it wouldn't be constitutionally protected in the sense of the principle of the permanent fund. But if the price of, let's say, oil were over a certain amount, that excess would spill over into this fund, and it wouldn't be normally available, but it might require a supermajority or something like that, so that there would be a way of curbing the insatiable governmental appetite to spend everything at its disposal, unless it really took a second look at the excess that came in that given year. And I'm just thinking, just throwing out one potential possibility and one potential use of some kind of an intermediate fund. And I don't know. I've been giving this a lot of thought, but I don't know.
President Groomer, through the chair. Many other states have exactly that. In fact, almost every other state has a statutory fund that is used for that purpose. There is a fence around that fund. As you know, a certain percentage of our royalties off of the North Slope, if we had, you know, certain types of development up there, would go into the permanent fund immediately. So that would be, you know, that would help build the permanent fund up. But the point being is that what would be the fence around the legislature in its wisdom blowing all the money, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and I understand that very much. What you would have, what the administration seems to be most concerned about, and I understand that, is the cash flow issue for them. Mm-hmm. It's that they can pay their bills before their money comes in, which is always on a delayed basis. Those of us in business understand that ourselves. You know, we have expenses that are there before the revenues come back that are generated from the sales or whatever it happens to be, and so. We can certainly structure that as well, but it's not. It wouldn't be part of this constitutional amendment. That would just be a statutory issue. That would be done through the normal process in the legislature. And I can easily pull up those other states, Massachusetts, for instance.
You have.
I don't have in front of them, but there are references.
You've given good backup
to,
on this.
Yeah.
Nebraska, for example, has a statutory fund, reserve fund.
Right. And it does have limitations on it, and it can only be used under certain conditions and all that. So we aren't inventing the wheel here.
Mr. Chair, might be dialogue for a second here. Statutory is one way of dealing with it. But if there is something constitutionally set up, like the CBR requires a supermajority to get into. I mean, you've got the range here, and we can just do, with the legislature, we can pretty much propose anything we wish.
And we often do.
Just to make it clear that if there is an oil and gas litigation settlement or royalties, which is why this fund was set up, to take these the litigation settlement funds and put it into this constitutional budget reserve, those funds, instead of going to the CBR, if HGR were in effect, would simply go into the general fund. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. And if the legislature so chooses, could deposit them into the permanent fund or
capital,
capital account or whatever. Yeah.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Harris, I think it would be good when we kind of create what we're going to do, that we somehow put create a cash flow account so that's available, or would we not need that? I think we talked about it, and I can't remember whether if the account could be used like the CBR now is as a cash flow account. It would be nice if we could either create the other one so that could be used like that, or else create a separate cash flow account that's just there and it never gets used because it's just for that purpose.
Well, Representative Wilkins, through the chair, I think that could be done quite easily statutorily. It wouldn't have to be done through this constitutional amendment mechanism.
Representative Roper? Nothing? We're joined by Representative Roper.
My apologies for not being here.
That's okay.
I certainly would have a number of things to say, but I don't want to rehash all things.
Well, we're going to have another opportunity next week.
Well, perhaps we can bring up my resolution at that time.
Certainly. Is that the budget?
It's the CBR repealer of 17C, which is the repeal of the three-quarter vote.
That's it.
It's a bit different. That's a bit different. That throws out the baby.
This one's the baby.
Yeah. It is constitutional. Right. It repeals a portion of the 17C provision, which
just support my resolution. It'll take care of that, Norm.
I do have a problem with where are we going to fund the new cash flow reserve fund? If we put it all into the principal, then we don't have the shock absorber cushion that we need in any fiscal plan. That's the problem I have with this.
So, just in terms of by way of just some analysis on your resolution compared to this one, because this one would take care of the entire thing and moot your resolution, what is the benefit of simply repealing 17C as opposed to the entire budget reserve fund?
Well, that would remove the requirement for a three-quarter vote. The CBR would remain in place as voted by the people to be a reserve fund. And then it would be able to be drawn by simple majority votes. Mm-hmm. That's the only distinction.
But the whole fund would be available, the whole $2.3 billion or whatever it is.
Well, it's still available. It is now today if we were to ask for that appropriation.
But only with a three-quarter vote.
Yeah.
So there is a bigger fence around it.
So, in other words, the kind of analysis that Representative Gruenberg was referring to, which has been primarily a statutory cushion, would remain a constitutional cushion subject to the same political constraints that we have right now on general fund revenues.
Right, and the source of funding and the expenditures would remain the same except for the number of votes is all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Representative Seaton?
Yeah, I think the other difference that we need to look at in those two is that we still have the legal obligation to repay the CBR what we've borrowed. We still have the sweep and the reverse sweep so we still have those mechanisms that are going to have to be fulfilled if we leave it in place and just take out the three-quarter vote. So that's another difference between these two provisions.
Representative Roper?
That's a point well taken. Representative Seaton is correct, and I think my amendment may possibly speak to that. I'm very interested in looking at that, though, particularly the sweep provisions or the repayment provisions, which are, in essence, something that perhaps I don't think any future legislature is going to be able to do unless we have some extraordinary windfall that none of us can envision, given the pressures on expenditures in the state. So.
Well, Representative Roper, it might be Representative Gruenberg.
I'm sorry. I'm kind of a little bit coming at it from the opposite point of view, maybe as one of the recipients of the benefits of the three-quarter vote, speaking on behalf of a small minority here. But I was thinking that if we have a CBR provision in the Constitution, but we say not only oil settlements would go in, but if the price of oil, we'll say, is extraordinarily high, some of that money would go in too. And I'm not saying I'm wedded to a three-quarter vote or something, but something, and I guess what we're kind of talking about in a way is a spending limit or at least a break on spending from a little different aspect. And I'm kind of talking out loud, but those are some of my thoughts. I don't know.
One thing, Representative Roakberg, you weren't here. What I wanted to do is get any amendments or sponsor committee substitutes on this resolution before the committee next time and bring it up. And if you could request a hearing on your bill, it probably we could take some and move them up in tandem, because I think you have a similar number of referrals, if you're interested. So
I am.
Okay. Any further?
Mr. Chairman, if I could be excused, that.
I know you've saved AML from talking about sales tax, so we'll take that up at a future date, and we'll stand adjourned. Thank you.